ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what a big time. Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Brian behind the glass, and it is a Friday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. A getaway edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 92.5 and ESPN 97.5. Said that backwards. What's going on, Blankers? Doing all right?
Doing all right. Hanging in there. Good to have a Friday. Looking forward to the weekend. How about yourself?
Doing well. Doing
Feeling
well.
Feeling better, I hope.
Yeah, a little bit better. A little bit good. Better. I'm working today, so yeah, a little bit better. Yeah. Quite an eventful few hours in the Branham household, but I'll spare all of you the details. No Will Anderson, I see, huh? So it's good news. Well, I don't know if we're going to see Nico Collins yet, but the Texans did rule out one Will Anderson. That's tough news there, Blankers. I mean, you're going up against a really good offense. Will Anderson, the AFC player, defensive player of the month, gets hurt, and then now he's going to miss at least one game. So one and most of the Jets game with what is his third severe, significant ankle injury in the last 12 months.
Yeah, not good news. And, you know, we've talked about this where we go through these series of guys getting hurt in games. They try to come back. They don't. And now you're wondering how many weeks is he going to be out because of the fact that, like you said, he's had multiple injuries to the ankle. You know how important he is. You hope that with Autry playing better football, with getting Jerry Hughes back, with having some of the other guys in the rotation, that they'll be fine. But at the same time, you're playing a team that you could really capitalize on having a significant pass rush because Jared Goff does not move around. He's more like a statue than he is a running quarterback. And if you could put pressure on the Lions on the edge, it could go a long way to you being able to put some pressure on the Lions, period. So not having him on the other side of Hunter is disappointing.
Yeah, I hope this is not something that lingers. Like, I'm hopeful that it's just the one game, and then hopefully it's fine, obviously. Like, you don't want him to miss as few games as possible for Will Anderson would be the best. I guess the good news is, like, we don't think it's that severe. He's not on the IR or anything like that, which they did with Kenyon Green. The good news is that Nico Collins could be back. They activated him to reserve to return to practice, that whole 21-day window, adding him to the 53, taking Kenyon Green off the 53. So that's the good news. Now, do you think he plays on Sunday night?
Yeah, I have my reservations. I have my questions. I think the first question is why did it take so long to get to a point where he finally practiced? And if it's gamesmanship, I think it's stupid because it took way too long. And even Dan Campbell said early in the week they expect him to play. I would rather have him testing that thing out all week just to see how it bounces back to kind of like a more strenuous practice schedule, similar to what a game might be or getting more reps in. But at the same time, I think it's hyper important to him playing. And we talked about this the other day, just because I think it gives the Texans a better chance to win because their offense is good as the weapons are. I think they're better whenever Nico Collins is on the field. We've seen the chemistry that he and CJ have, specifically when CJ goes, off script and out of the pocket and starts extending plays. But even in the regular offensive game, and they go back all the way to the first Indianapolis game when they iced a game with an out pattern with less than 2 minutes, and the pass was perfect, the catch was on target. The catch was on time. They were perfect together, and they just have that kind of the synergy and chemistry that you want to see, that you need against good football teams, and there's no doubt you're playing a damn good football team.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to think either. Like, it's weird that they did this on a Friday and not yesterday. Like, I felt like if he was going to play on Sunday, that he would have been the return to practice designation would have been done yesterday. So that kind of confuses me, other than, maybe they felt like they didn't need him to practice. So I'm on the fence on this one. I don't really quite understand it, if I'm being perfectly honest. I thought Thursday was the big day, and I guess we'll see. If he doesn't play on Sunday, then Thursday was the big day. If he does play on Sunday, then I guess Thursday's not the big day. So we'll just have to wait and see, I guess, when it comes to that. If he does play, does he fix the woes of this offense? This offense has struggled, obviously, in pass protection, but that's not the only thing that's wrong with this Texans offense. They've struggled in the red zone. They can move the ball, but they're not scoring a ton. How much does Nico back fix everything that's woeing the Houston Texans?
Unfortunately, there's more to fix than just adding your best receiver back to your offensive game plan when you can't block and you can't keep your quarterback from having to run for his life. life on most plays. So I think that it, you know, it's definitely a benefit anytime Nico's on the field, and we saw that with what he did and the production he had from the time the season started. But on the flip side, it, you know, Nico Collins doesn't block at the offensive line, and I don't need him blocking a whole lot. I need a left guard that's capable of at least holding his own. I need an offensive line that has continuity enough to try and keep some of the pressure off of CJ's rear end on every single play. And I think that's where the focus has to begin because, you know, I keep saying it's like the, you know, the neck bone connected to the collarbone. The fact is that the offensive line is connected to your quarterback, your receivers, your running game, everything that you're going to do. And right now your offensive line is a joke. It's in disarray. And yeah, it starts with pointing at one position on the field, but I think it's across the board where they have to get better regardless if Nico plays or not.
Yeah, I think it helps you. It doesn't cover up every wart. It's kind of getting better in the aggregate, right? Like, okay, we know we're not going to be great in this area, but how can we pick up the slack? You know, Nico would help that, whether it's screens or getting rid of the football quicker or the defense having to, you know, pay a lot of attention to Nico Collins. Obviously, it helps. I mean, Nico Collins is one of the better receivers in the NFL. He's a top 10-ish receiver. Obviously, it helps. So, yeah, I think it would help the offense. I don't think it fixes everything. And for the Texans, I mean, we say the same thing over and over. For them to hit their ceiling as an offense, as a football team, they're going to have to figure out the pass protection, even though you're getting Nico Collins back. Now, this kind of this is curious to me. I'm just looking through the injury report here. And Tank Dell, limited today. He's now questionable. He's a questionable designation. Was fine Wednesday, was fine on Thursday, limited today, and is now questionable. So I don't like that. Your top two receivers are questionable.
They say why?
It says back.
Huh.
No, that's the first I've heard of it.
Yeah, me too. And I don't know if that's just precautionary and it's something you want to put out there, but I hope to God it's nothing more than that, because as much as it's good to have Nico back, he's probably going to be on somewhat of a pitch count, but you're probably going to want to monitor him at least to some degree, whereas Tank Dell's a guy you have to have on the field because of the fact that he's basically the only other guy that I think CJ knows and trusts and the offense has confidence in is going to make the plays.
Yeah, no, I don't feel great about that. Your top two receivers are questionable. Hopefully, you know, maybe they both play. Maybe neither one plays. It's the, you know, the beauty of being questionable, I guess. Foley Fatukasi, he's questionable too. He did not practice all week, so that the defensive line could be, you know, even a little thinner. He's got a couple of injuries, groin, shoulder, so that's something to keep an eye on. Jerry Hughes questionable, whatever, they activated him. And Jeff Okuda, is this the first time we're going to see Jeff Okuda in a Houston Texans uniform? Could he get some actual snaps in this game?
Yeah, I hope it's not on outside corner, but, you know, I think as long as Lassiter and Stingley are still going to be on the field the majority of the time, I think they're going to be fine. I think that's his old team he's playing against. Maybe he's got a little extra fire in his belly for that, but I don't anticipate seeing him a whole lot. You know, if there's one thing that you can feel good about, it's the fact that Lassiter has looked really good for the time that he's been out there this season, better than a lot of people, I think, anticipated or expected. And with Williams coming back for the Lions, along with St. Brown, and the way that they are capable of throwing the football, I would rather have Stingley and Lassiter out there for the majority of the snaps.
Yeah, I would be shocked if we see him at all. He would only be because of injury, you know? Like, it's not something you want to see. Like, I would like to see the Houston Texans be a little creative with what they're doing at the nickel corner, but I don't – if I'm predicting what they do, like, Jalen Petrie's just going to play that spot, whether it's for the good or for the bad. And a lot of times it's for the bad whenever you're lining them up man-to-man, especially with what the Lions have a receiver. So, no, I don't think we'll see Okuda. Although, if they did it, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that – If there's a chance for him to better your situation at the nickel, then that's fantastic. Because as we've talked about week in, week out, Petrie's really, really good around the box, around the line of scrimmage, getting into the backfield and hitting. He's not so good in coverage. And, you know, this is another team where they have a variety of different ways that they can beat you in the slot. And they can beat you with Laporta. And they can beat you with their three receiver sets. And they can do a ton of things to where it could be making Petrie vulnerable yet again. And that's not what you want to do to a guy that really doesn't throw many incompletions. And the offense that's normally clicking on all cylinders, you're going to need your best defensive people on the field. And they're going to have to be doing, you know, a really good job. I don't think that the first time you throw Jeff Okuda on the field, you want to throw him into the fire of playing the Lions offense. That's not a good situation.
I wonder what the plan would be if the Okay, I don't want to say injury because that's just mean. But what if Jalen Petrie had to miss a few snaps? Like, I wonder who plays the nickel. I wonder if they would go Lassiter inside because Akuda's more of a boundary corner. Now, we haven't seen Lassiter play inside. We thought when they drafted him that he was going to play inside, but they haven't done that. They have Dez King on the roster, practice squad. So you have to call him up before the game. So, like, I don't think that that's, you know, unless you're thinking about it before the game, but you wouldn't be thinking about that before the game.
No.
Like, I wonder what their plan B would be at nickel corner if there were. I guess maybe you would go with one of the safeties. Maybe you go with Murray.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. But again, Murray's not great in coverage.
He's terrible.
He excels in again, being up in the box and you know, his ability to tackle. But, yeah, I don't think that it's a strong suit of his either where I would feel comfortable with him being there. But I think safety is probably the first option that they would go with unless Akuda, you know, feels like he can be comfortable enough because he gives you the best in coverage. He's not going to be great hitting and vice versa if you play Murray there. That's not a situation I need to be thinking about, but it did cross my mind the minute you started. I was like, man, what if Petrie went down?
You would have to now Jimmy Ward's coming back, so you do have that extra safety now. I wonder what the starters look like at safety now with Ward back, because before Ward was hurt, it was Ward and Eric Murray, and then Bullock was kind of coming in for Eric Murray, and they were kind of having the work share 50-50. But I think he's played better than Eric Murray.
Yep.
He's more of a natural center fielder than Eric Murray and Jimmy Ward, quite frankly. I'm really fascinated, too, to see what the snap share is for the safety position.
I think it's going
to
be Murray and Bullock, and I think that they'll probably ease Jimmy Ward back in. I don't think they're just going to throw him into the fire right away, and we know he's fragile and he's been hurt a lot lately. I think that they'll probably go Murray and Bullock and then work Jimmy Ward in where necessary.
He might be that. He could play a little nickel. Now, you wouldn't want to play a whole lot of man with him in the nickel.
No.
But he can certainly play the box. You know what I mean? Like, he'd be good in that situation, but it wouldn't be great in terms of coverage, which I don't think the Texans have a good cover nickel guy.
Like, no, they don't.
Seem to put a whole lot of value in that.
And if King hasn't played all year, then you obviously think, well, there's something. He's not what he used to be, and they didn't think highly of him before when they cut him and then brought him back. But, you know, if he's sitting on the practice squad now and he's not been active, I think there's probably a good reason for it.
Yeah, he was only active, that one game, and that's whenever they had they needed him to return kicks. And then he got benched, remember?
Yeah.
He came in and, like, returned a few punts, and he had a bobble and then, like, a misplay on one, and then they benched him. All right, 713-780-ESPN, Friday edition of the Killer Bees. We got a busy show planned for you. DJ Big Enemy will be joining us for a couple segments in the 5 o'clock hour. What are your top storylines ahead of Sunday night? I've been waiting all day for Sunday night. Who said it? Can the Killer Bees continue with their momentum, continue their winning ways? BZ Money, too, going to hand you out some winners. We've been killing it with BZ Money. 713-780-ESPN, HR. RMP listener line on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitter at ESPN975, Blankers at Pac-Man, Joel, Brian at Seg by BMAC, I'm at Jeremy Branham. DeMeco Ryans, I think he had enough with all of the offensive line questions that he's been getting from the media. So they had Chris Strauser talk to the media, the offensive line coach for the Houston Texans. Everybody wants him sacked. Everybody wants him fired. Do you feel better or worse after listening to Chris Strauser about the Texans' offensive line issues? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, a word for VanderfordAir.com. Check out Vanderford Air right now because Vanderford Air has a variety of different services from plumbing to air conditioning to heating to repiping that they can do for you. And they do them all extremely well. The main thing that I'm here to tell you about is everything that they do is 100% money back guarantee right there at the top of their on their website and everywhere you go. Your satisfaction is guaranteed or you get your money back. And that is a game changer when you're talking about a service provider like an AC company. The fact is it's one thing that you get the work done when you need it done and that everything works. The other thing is that it works the way you want it to and it doesn't break down a couple days after they leave. And the work that their people do is going to be top notch and they're going to be polite. They're going to be prompt. Everything's going to go your way, and if it's not, most companies just say, well, we fixed the problem, and we got to keep going, and not with Vanderford Air. The fact is they're going to put everything in writing, and that is if they're going to replace a part, and they'll give you a separate invoice in writing or an estimate for if you want to replace the entire system. They're always going to be there for you, everything in writing. They're going to have written specification of what they're going to do, what parts they're going to use, and how it's all going to go. Then their people are going to do a fantastic job for you, and they want you to be satisfied with that. The parts and the systems that they put in are going to work exactly how they're supposed to. The temperature will be exactly where you want it to be, and that everything operates at factory standards. If any of that is not to your satisfaction, you get your money back. It's phenomenal. And it starts with the phone call. You call them at 281-557-COOL. They'll be at your place within 24 hours. If they're not, guaranteed. They're gonna take care of you because of the fact that they guarantee from the minute you call them, within 24 hours, they're going to be there to see you. They don't want you to wait. They don't want you unhappy. They want to be the company that takes care of you every step of the way. Save that number in your phone. You never know when you're going to use it, but when you need someone for AC, you know how important it can be. 281-557-COOL. Check them out online, VandefortAir.com.
You found the killer bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. So, Chris Strauser talked to the media yesterday, which is kind of odd, right? That you have the offensive line coach of a professional football team talking to the media. I thought originally that it was like, hey, okay, I'm D'Amico Ryans, I'm the head coach of the team, I'm a defensive-minded head coach, and all I get asked about is how bad my offensive line is. Here you go, offensive line coach, you go deal with them. Throw them out to the wolves. Now, I was told that Strauser was requested by some media members and that they eventually, not right away, they eventually allowed the media to have a little sit-down with Strauser. Now, you might have noticed he wasn't on camera. That was by design for whatever reason. Not exactly sure why he wasn't on camera. But we do have some recording of it. A lot of this from Big Sarge Media. So credit to Big Sarge for posting this on his YouTube channel. Post some really good stuff on there if you're a Texans fan. Good content from Big Sarge. So here's the first thing that caught my ear. Not my eye because he wasn't on video. It caught my ear. Strauser talked. Because look, the Texans have had trouble with stunts, right? So he was asked, obviously, about the stunts. Here was Strauser on the Texans' troubles with stunts.
You know, stunts are always a challenge. I mean, there's a reason that defenses do stunt on third down because there's some challenges with it. So to me, it all goes back to starting with just like being really good at one-on-one pass protection, because you get that done, and then the next step, the next phase is to be able to handle a stunt. And a lot of what goes into handling a stunt is the same stuff that goes into being a really good one-on-one protector. So, you know, there's a lot of little things that we know that as we really studied, we had that extra 3 days to really kind of go back and look at some stuff and really see some stuff that consistently has shown up as issues and stuff. Again, like I said, that I need to go back and do a better job as a coach to get these guys locked into better and find a way to drill it better and make sure when we show up on Sunday that everybody's got complete confidence in what we're doing.
Thoughts?
It's interesting to me because I'm with you. I saw Will Kunkel start putting out there that he got Strauser for a one-on-one, and I thought, wow, that's crazy. And then when I realized that D'Amico put him out there with the media, it's
to
like...
To be fair, I don't think it was D'Amico. I think it was the media request, and I think the NFL rule is that if your coach gets requested, I think they're required to.
Okay. But at the same time, in my head, I'm thinking, well, are they just going to throw him to the wolves and let him fend for himself? Or, you know, what's the deal? But when you hear this, I think it kind of lends itself to me to the fact that they still believe he knows what to do. He's intelligent as a coach. The problem is that there's a disconnect somewhere. And even if he explains what he just explained in that soundbite, to me is, so then where's the disconnect? Are the guys just not getting it? You say you got to drill them a different way so that they can get better at it? Because it's not just the stunts, it's the twists. The twists have been really screwing with them. The fact that they look like they're unprepared, they stick with the twist too long. There's a gaping hole in the middle of the line for the other guy coming from the linebacker position or from the outside in, and they are just wreaking havoc all over the place when it happens. And it looks like they are inexperienced at doing what he is kind of simplifying for us to say is a quote-unquote easy fix. So I don't think that it put my mind at ease in any way, shape, or form hearing from him. It's just that hopefully he's right that he knows what to do to try and rectify what's been going on. But why hasn't it been rectified yet?
Yeah, that's where I'm at. That last sentence you just said, Blankers. Yep. Like he talks about having the extra 3 days. Bro, what? Like it's been 2.5 months. These are issues you've had since week one, not just this past week. So he's like, oh, we've had the extra 3 days. You've had 10 weeks. You had 10 weeks to try to rectify this and to figure this out. So the whole, we had an extra 3 days, that's going to magically solve it when it's been an issue all year long? You've played 9 games, but now you're pointing to the extra 3 days that you have on this mini bye that it's going to be the cure-all? Are you kidding me? And he says a lot of the same stuff as being good at man-to-man is what makes you good in stunts. I'm not seeing that. Like, I think Laramie Tunsil's a very good man-on-man blocker. But you throw a little stunt, and most of it's on the interior. It doesn't really, you know, mess with Laramie. But, like, you know, Kenyon Green, is he telling me that Kenyon Green's not a good man-to-man blocker? Because he's saying it's a lot of the same stuff that you see on stunts. Well, he's struggling there. So is Juice. So is Shaq Mason. So is he telling me those guys aren't good man-on-man? Maybe he is. Maybe he is saying that. Here's another one from Strouser talking about how he has belief in his guys, which he has to say.
Yeah, everybody in the unit for sure has the ability to play. Like, they wouldn't be here if we didn't think they could play. And so, yes, everybody in the unit for sure has the ability to do it. You know, there's always going to be some challenges on third down stuff, I think, across the league in terms of recognizing some of the stuff that's going to come. But I think that's an area that, you know, I know that's an area that we can you know, take some strides and, you know, improve on. And so we can, like I said, you know, a lot of that goes back to just what we do during the weekend practice and how we get them, you know, a little bit better prepared for what we're anticipating seeing. And there's always going to be something that shows up game day that we didn't anticipate seeing.
Right. Forgive my chuckle, Jeremy, but the whole time once he said that and said, of course we believe in them or they wouldn't be here, and I'm going, have you seen Kendrick Green? Did you see what we saw? Do you know that there's a reason why we all questioned why once you benched Kenyon Green, you had to put him back in the game because he really can't play? And the question was, why was he on your roster? And how did you plan on backfilling that with somebody else, which you didn't do? That's crazy to me, but that's why I was chuckling.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that was a bunch of, you have to say that as a coach. You can't throw your guys under the bus. The moment that you do that, you're going to be out of the job. Like, that's the way professional sports works. You can't throw your guys, especially as the offensive line coach. Alex says he'll be out of job after the season, if not sooner. That's what's weird, though, is that he was solid last year. Mm-hmm. Like, this patchwork offensive line a year ago was way better than this offensive line that has way more talent. So, like, it's hard for me to say that Chris Strouser's a bad coach. I think he might have to have the right pieces, maybe the type of players that he needs to be successful with his scheme. But I think that the worst I could say about Strouser as a coach is maybe he's the type of guy who's not very good at adjusting to the personnel he has.
Well, let me say this and let's see what you think about this. But the fact is, and you know, you and I have been around teams and sports for a long time now, you're only as good a coach as your players are willing to accept your coaching. So at a certain point, maybe last year when you had a couple of journeymen, when you had a couple of guys that knew that this was an important point in their career and they were performing because there was a lot more sense of urgency on a personal front as well as from a team perspective, that they were stepping up, they were dialed in, he was teaching them well, he was coaching them up, and everything was going well. When you get the guys that have been taken care of and they have the money and they're set and they've been extended and everything feels good for them, maybe there's not as much urgency. Maybe there's not attention to detail from their part of going, yeah, you know what? I'm good. I know I'm good enough. I'm getting paid. I'm set. I'm all right. Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but everybody knows I'm good enough. I can figure this out. It just seems like maybe the difference between last year and this year is you got guys that aren't as dialed in or as open to the coaching that he did a year ago.
Yeah, that would be problematic because now you're talking about like unprofessionalism, which is terrifying. But I would say that the issues with this offensive line, in my opinion, aren't the bookends. Like I think that you can get by with what you've had at tackle. In fact, I think the tackle play's been good. I think Laramie's been good. I think Titus has actually been good. It's the guys in the middle, and those guys are young. You know, like Kenyon mm-hmm. Green has a lot to prove. Juice has a lot to prove. Shaq Mason does not. He's an older veteran, but. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely plausible. Like, I wouldn't rule that out.
I think a lot of times, too, the veterans are the guys that set the standard in the room. And I think that you're right. Yeah. Shaq has not been good. But if they're looking around the room and the three guys that are the most decorated and the most respected in the room are the guys just kind of going through the motions, then it's like, well, at a certain point, well, you know, why do I have to do more or be different than what they're doing? Yeah, I'm younger, but I, you know, like in the case of Juice, I was a high enough draft pick. But overall, Shaq has been less than. I think Howard's been okay. I think Tunsil obviously got over all the penalty issues. He's supposed to be one of the top five tackles in this league. I don't think he's played like that, regardless of, you know, him playing, you know, decent. So I think that maybe as a group, it's just, again, at a certain point, even if you're a good coach, maybe it starts falling on deaf ears, or you need a different voice in the room because the delivery needs to change and maybe some of the coaching and teaching needs to change. I don't know specifically, but it does feel like there's a disconnect.
That's why, like, you can't say that's exactly what's going on because we don't know what's going on in those in that room. But, like, would I rule it out? No, I can't rule it out. Texture saying Laramie Tunsil's a bad captain. You know, the body language on the field ain't great. 9271, and I'm a body language expert. 9271, they were better last year with Fant and Green and Howard were out. They were. Like, they were a better offensive line last year with lesser talent. Yeet says fire him now. See, I don't think that's the answer. I don't think that you can fire him now. I don't that to me is not a positive move. I don't think that you can gain anything by that. Here's another one from Strouser. This is where I'm going with Strouser. Like, he might be a good offensive line coach, but might not have the personnel needed for like his specific style, his specific philosophy. Because there's a lot of coaches that they don't budge with their style, even if they have players that aren't great in their style. Here was Strouser talking about that.
The scheme is I believe, a proven scheme. It's been used in this system for a lot of years. And so to me, it always goes back to, like, I always come to work in the morning and know that whatever shows up on tape goes back to me. And so that's my starting point is, how do I do it better and how do I get this unit to play better and all those things.
Okay, the last part of that was just word salad. But the beginning, like, this is a scheme, this is a proven scheme. That, to me, sounds like a guy who's not really willing to budge. Because, like, he does some complicated stuff with this scheme. Like, the West Coast offense has some pretty complicated stuff with the offensive line. Like, adjusting with what you want to do on stunts can be complicated at times. I think you can dumb it down. I think you can make it easier for offensive linemen. But hearing that from Strouser, it makes me believe that he's not willing to do that.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think the other thing, to your point about – maybe, you know, it's just not the right – he doesn't have the right kind of personnel to do things, or he wants a different kind of personnel to do what he wants to do. You got to believe that there needs to be communication, whether it's he and Bobby Slowick, because he's not going to have the one-on-one with a Nick or D'Amico, but talking about, like, who do we need to have to be able to execute what we're trying to do, you know, better. And I think that when you look at the Kendrick Green situation, or you look at the, you know, bringing in Zach Thomas and saying these are guys – that we're going to put on our roster for a reason, yet we don't know if they can play. In the case of Thomas, they just picked him up. In the case of Kendrick Green, we found out pretty quickly he wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. As an offensive line coach, it's my ass on the line. He just said that. If I know my job is, you know, in jeopardy or is going to be scrutinized because of something like this, I damn well better be having the confidence to be and be comfortable enough to say, hey, look, I think personnel-wise we might need to do this, or I think that, you know, schematically maybe because of the guys we have, we do this instead of that. But I would hope that there's that communication.
I prefer the schematic side of that. Like, to me, get your best five and then figure out how they can be their best five. Like, I rather have a coach who can adjust with the personnel that he has. But if you're not capable of doing that, then you need to have courage and the bravado to do the personnel side of things. So, yeah, both are on the table. I prefer the scheme adjustment before I prefer the personnel adjustment. Mm-hmm. But they're both on the table if the other one's not working. Last one from Strouser. He was asked if there's any chance of moving Titus Howard to left guard.
We're always talking personnel, or really every week, you know, good or bad. We've had, you know, as we know, some good weeks, and we're still talking personnel because, you know, we're always trying to figure out what the best five is, what the best mix is. Not trying to move guys too much because it's, you know, it's a challenge at this point in the season in week to have to move guys from one spot to other. So, but, you know, really everybody that's on our roster is in play.
I don't know what he said there. It sounded like, hey, we don't want to do that, but we're willing to do that. Like, okay.
Yeah, I think that was more like a cover your ass from the standpoint of, hey, look, we're not going to rule anything out, even though we all know that Titus Howard doesn't want to play left guard. And the fact is that, you know, you don't have a whole lot of viable options to play left guard. So at the same time, they want to make sure that everybody knows, hey, nothing's off limits. We're going to consider everything. They just seem to be the kind of coaching staff that doesn't want to ruffle anybody's feathers like a Titus Howard when everything should be on the table at this point.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe it is that. Or it could also be the gamesmanship. Maybe they're planning on doing this Sunday, and they don't want it out there. I think both of those things are on the table. Speaking of linemen, the Detroit Lions starting left tackle is out for Sunday night's game. So a little tit for tat on the injuries, I guess. Starting left tackle out for Detroit. The AFC Defensive Player of the Month, Will Anderson, out for the Houston Texans. All right, what did you think of what Strouser had to say? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. My biggest takeaway is I feel like he's a good coach whenever he has guys for his scheme, and he's kind of round peg square holing this right now with guys he might not love in terms of fitting his personnel. 713-780-3776. Is this coach speak or not? Let's listen to some sound bites from coaches and general managers that spoke this week about this game coming up Sunday. And you tell us, coach speak or nah? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Alex on the Twitch, if Howard gets moved to left guard, will he fake an injury during the game? Has he been known to do that? Fake an injury?
Isn't that a tonsil thing? Or extend an injury?
Maybe extend an injury.
Yeah, maybe he just wants to emphasize that he's right tackle only. So if you put him left guard, he's like, well, guess I'm hurt.
I've been watching
his feelings are hurt.
Yeah. Certainly.
There's no doubt about that. I've been watching that that Red Sox documentary thing, the 3-0 comeback.
Yeah, I think it's called The Comeback.
Oh, I didn't know about it. Sounds good, though.
It is pretty good. I've made it through an episode and a half.
What's it on?
In and out of some sleep. It's on Netflix.
Okay,
but
good.
I had forgotten that Nomar Garciaparra, remember that year that they were trying to trade for A-Rod?
Yep.
Well, yeah. Nomar got really like upset about it, and he maybe faked an injury during spring training. Maybe faked an injury during spring training, according to some. I had forgotten about that. So that's what that made me think about the Titus Howard thing. And the other thing to keep in mind, like I just thought about this because of what Alex said. You know how usually the reporters that are out at practice, they're only out there for X amount of time, and the team is only showing them what the team is willing to show them, and then they make them go away.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we see the offensive line that is working together in the first team. I didn't see that this week. And it makes me wonder. And obviously they're going to have a change because, Kenyon Green's hurt and Jared Patterson's coming back. But, we are going to see a starting offensive line that's different for the first time. But usually we have a pretty good idea what the starting offensive line is going to be by this time every single week. We didn't see that this week.
No, we haven't heard about it either.
No.
We assume that Patterson's just going to start at left guard. But you're right. We don't know. And
They're hiding it.
They are. And I was going to say the extension of that is something that you and I were talking about. But knowing that every coaching staff and every front office in every sport is different, some people are hell bent on the gamesmanship of trying to take every possible big or little.
I hope it's not that. I get gamesmanship at quarterback, but left guard.
Yeah, they did the same thing with Nico. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Overall, there's a pattern here that it seems like they're trying to, whether it works or not or it has any impact or not, it seems like they're trying to keep everything so close to Nick's vest that they don't make it they don't make anything clear until they have to.
I'm not dismissing what you're saying as being unrealistic for this team, because I think you're right. I think you're on to the idea that they would at least consider the idea. I just think it's ridiculous. A quarterback, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, maybe once, like we saw with A&M, one, you have a running quarterback, you have a pocket quarterback. That made a difference for them in a few games. And Nico, hey, you either have a deep threat or you don't. That can make a difference. A subpar left guard? I mean, I don't think that changes the way the Lions approach. They're still going to run stunts. They're still going to walk sticks up to the line and try to disguise pressure. It's not really going to change much for them.
Yeah, but why not do it?
Right.
Like, what are you giving up by, showing
you're
it?
You're not
like,
giving up anything. So, I mean, it's fine, but I just don't think it makes a difference.
I don't think it makes a difference either. But I'm with Blankers on it.
Yeah, I think that there's organizations that think that it's a very, very, maybe to a lot of people, a very immaterial thing to like not let you know what the starting lineup is till right before game time. And there are other coaching staffs that believe, hey, every little advantage could possibly be something. We're not telling them. We're going to keep this under wraps. Don't say a word. When you do interviews with the coaching staff pregame, don't even get into it.
We're going to unleash Jared Patterson on you by surprise.
Well, I think you're both right. I mean, in the sense that it's not really going to matter, I agree that it's not going to really change what Detroit's trying to do. But at the same time, does an organization think along those lines? I do.
They do.
I do think that. And then also, like, where's the harm here? Like, hey, we're not going to show the media
who
our starting offensive line is. So what? Like, you're not really, like, there's no detriment there. There's no risk there.
But the significance can still be somewhat minute, but at the same time, it's one thing to BMAC's point of say, oh, look out, because we're unleashing Jared Patterson. But guess what? The one where it's a little bit more significant is we're putting Titus Howard at left guard, and we're really shifting the
different.
Offensive line.
That'd be a little different,
so maybe
yeah.
that's you know See. We don't know, but maybe that is exactly why they're sitting on it.
That's where my conspiracy theorist mind was going.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it's something that's a little bit larger scale than we've thought.
Like that, Titus at left guard and Fisher at right tackle.
Yes,
that
exactly.
would be significant.
Exactly. Like that. Like as y'all were arguing that out, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, well if this is true, and like we're actually like sniffing this out a little bit here, and we could be way off, but like if this is true and our theory here is correct, then it's probably something mm-hmm. larger, like playing your best five, which was Blinker's point the other day. Like play your best five and get them out there however you can get out there, and if you feel like Blake Fisher, a second rounder, is better than Jared Patterson, who's been solid as a sixth rounder, let's figure out a way to make that happen. And the natural way of making that happen would be Titus Howard to play left guard.
Yep.
And his feelings might get hurt. To Alex's point, maybe he fakes an injury, but at least you kind of call his bluff there a little bit. Hey, this is what we got to do for the best interest of our team. If you're not willing to do that, then we're going to buy you out of your contract at the end of the year, because you can get out of that deal after a June 1st cut.
Which they might be planning on doing anyway.
I know. I mean, yeah. He's making more money than he's worth, so.
And we were just respectfully discussing that. We weren't arguing it out or fighting it out.
It was very argumentative.
Yeah, okay.
Very argumentative. It's not that it's a bad thing.
No,
argument,
not at all.
An argument doesn't have to have a negative connotation, but it was definitely an argument. Let's get to some coach speak, or maybe GM speak. Nick Caserio talking about Jared Goff. Where is this on the coach speak, GM speak meter?
For sure. Whatever reason, sometimes players just need a change of scenery. And Jared led the Rams in the Super Bowl when he was in – you know, L.A., mm-hmm. we played against them in whatever year that was in the Super Bowl when I was in New England. So Jared was the number one pick for a reason.
Right.
He's a really good football player. Sometimes you have some lulls. Sometimes you need to change the scenery. Seems to have been reinvigorated, and they've done a good job of just kind of setting up the system, kind of playing to his strengths. And Jared's a very smart, very efficient, very accurate quarterback that takes care of the football. And then they've married it with Ben's system, and he's played at a high level over the last few years.
All right, where's that on the GM speak meter there?
I don't think he's wrong at all. I think that whether it's a change of scenery or not, we all knew the knock on Goff leaving the Rams was that it was all McVay. McVay was doing a lot of the coaching in his headset up until the mic in his speaker in his helmet was turned off. That it was more McVay than it was Goff, and then they felt like they could upgrade, and that was a slap in his face. And he got in the right situation. And the right situation, whether it was just a fresh start in a new organization or not, he is accurate because of the fact that he got the right offensive coordinator. He's got a ton of weapons around him. They built it around him the right way and allowed him to kind of cater to his strengths. And that's what they do. And he's been incredibly successful and more successful than I thought he was going to be. So from that regard, I think he was pretty accurate.
Yeah, I do too. I don't think there was any GM speak there. I thought that was 100% accurate. Jared Goff's like that point guard that's just super solid and never turns the ball over, but he's not like a James Harden type of point guard where he's just always turning it over. Like, yeah, he's going to put up huge numbers, he's going to win an MVP, but he's always going to turn it over and put your team in a bad spot like Josh Allen.
I'll give him John Stockton because Stockton wasn't flashy. He wasn't above the rim. He wasn't like, you know, doing the things that make SportsCenter. But at the end of the game, he had double-digit assists. Like you said, he didn't turn it over. He made the right play at the right time. He was smart on the court, and that's exactly what Jared Goff is. And he's an all-star.
Stockton's a Hall of Famer, though.
Don't know what Jared Goff turns out at the end of his career, but he's putting up the numbers to be in the conversation if he keeps doing this.
If he wins the Super Bowl with the Lions, he'll have a shot.
He's John Stockton-esque.
Short of that, I don't think so.
I think his point was more that Stockton is the guy that you can always trust.
Yep.
He's not going to make a bunch of turnovers. He's just going to be
fair.
A really solid point guard. He's not going to be this flashy point guard that wins an MVP or wins a scoring title, but you can also kind of trust him with a really good offense.
I do kind of reject part of Caserio's point, though, about the change of scenery, because I mean, he was with Sean McVay. I mean, arguably the best offensive mind, if not the best one, certainly top three, along with the guy he has now with Benny Johnson, and of course Shanahan in San Francisco. So this might have been like a case for Goff where he just hit a maturity. Like, he was obviously a younger quarterback in L.A., hit a certain year in the league, saw more things, experienced more things, got more coaching, and just hit a maturity level that allowed him to take a step forward. I think he could have still gotten to this point with McVay. It's not like he upgraded with his coaching, though.
But
he didn't upgrade with his talent.
I'm going to argue that back. I'm going to push back because of the fact that if
just
he's
discussing really nicely.
Right.
Not arguing.
Respectfully discussing.
Respectfully discussing.
The fact that with him, if he stayed, he would never have gotten full credit for it.
That's a different conversation to me.
But that's why the fresh start was necessary, because as long as he was married to that situation with that head coach in that environment, that in the way you set it up, then he may have success, but at the end of the day, he's probably not going to get as much credit for it as McVay is in Detroit with Dan Campbell. And yes, we found out what Ben Johnson can be, but it was a total fresh start to where he could be and get credit for the quarterback that he always thought he was when he was drafted number one overall.
Yeah, if you can do it in two different offenses, then I think you get more credit, whether that's fair or not. Like, why does that matter? Like, if Goff would have stayed with the Rams and did exactly what he's doing right now at Detroit, should he get less or more credit? I think he should get equal credit. I think that what is the bigger, like, common denominator here is that both offenses have been very good. And, like, I don't think that Jared Goff is the type of quarterback that you could put anything around him and they're going to excel and they're going to shine. Where if you've had quarterbacks, you know, in NFL history that you can do that with currently, like, you put Josh Allen with us and Josh Allen's going to put up numbers. Lamar Jackson with us, like, he's going to put up numbers. I think Peyton Manning was that way. Yes, he had really good receivers, but how many of those receivers were made by Peyton Manning? Goff needs to be a guy that's in a really good offense, but whenever he's in a really good offense, he can take that offense to another level because he's mistake free. He completes a high percentage of his passes, whereas you put those other superstar, splashy type of quarterbacks with these types of offenses, I don't know if they're really going to click as well as the Lions are currently clicking. Let's get to some more of these coach speaks on the other side. Also, do these takes from national media match what we're seeing from the Stroud Texans pass protection issues? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
All right, guys, before we go to the break, another quick minute here for Underdog Fantasy. And I took another rough loss last night on my pick'em entries. Went for the max payout on two pick'em entries, but Chris Paul missed on my higher pick by just one assist, and Lamar Jackson missed on rushing yards by just 7 yards, which cost me both of my pick'em entries. Brutal losses. But look, it's okay, because unlike season-long leagues where you might get stuck with someone injured or underperforming, with Underdog Fantasy, every day is a new chance to make money, real big money. And here's the thing, I went for the biggest payoff possible. I like to gamble, I like to go big. But if you like less risk and a better chance to win, use their flex options where the payouts are lower, but you can have one or even two losses and still have your entry be a winner. And take advantage of their profit boost, so when you are taking less risk with flex or a double flex, you can make up for the difference on the lower payout with profit boost up to 50%, like they have going for the NHL and soccer today. And that's the other thing. If you don't like stat projections except for the NFL or NBA, maybe they nailed it. Maybe it's too tough to call, so just tip your cap and play another sport. They've got the NFL, NBA, college football, college basketball, Major League Baseball, NHL, soccer, tennis, MMA, and much more. No matter your game, Underdog Fantasy has you covered. And don't forget, while playing Pick'em, that you can cash out a winning entry early by just tapping the Win Now button to cash out your entry whenever you want. And with that type of flexibility, why would you play anywhere else other than with Underdog Fantasy? So download the app, sign up with promo code BMAC, and deposit now to get up to $1,000 in bonus cash instantly. That's promo code BMAC, B-M-A-C. Must be 18 plus and present in state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit NCP Gambler or ncpgambling.org.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Look at LSU defense last season. Matt House had a track record of being a good DC, but couldn't get guys to buy in, so his message wasn't getting across to them, and they'd play like crap. That's the other thing. You know, talking about Strouser and the O-line, a lot of times that message doesn't get through, whether it's you, whether it's the personnel. It could be a variety of different reasons. Sometimes it just doesn't work, which is bad. 9271, Bruce Matthews and Mike Munchak played every position of the O-line. Tell Howard to put his big boy pants on and play where he needs. He listens to Tunsil too much. I can't remember – I mean, I'm sure Titus Howard, all the pants he has are big. But, yeah, he doesn't like to play left guard, even though he's handsomely paid.
And they're right. I mean, from a, the texter's right. From the standpoint of you're getting paid handsomely, they took care of you. Now do the right thing to whether it's take care of the team or just do what, you know, what's the in the best interest of the team at this point in the season. Your check's not going to change. You're still going to get paid the same amount, which is extremely well. So just do whatever job they ask you to do.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, look, you're getting paid a lot of money. Like you said, if you pay me that type of money, I'll do a lot of things for you. 8807, just not what that dude on Firefest was willing to do. 8807, Jets defense is elite. Lions are very average. Bottom 10 defense against the pass and the rush. CJ's going to carve this team up. There's some confidence there. Hopefully, I mean, they're a different team at home than they are on the road. Here was Dan Campbell talking about the Texans' young players. How much of this is Coach Big?
Yeah, I do. I mean, look, they've got a lot of young talent that they hit on. And it's funny because most of those players over there are all players that we really were high on too, you know. And so when you see that and you see some of these players, you're like, man, that was a good one. You know, that was a good pick they got there. And you see how hard they play and the type of football players they are. And so I do think there's a lot of similarities, you know. And there again, I think they've drafted well. I think D'Amico's done a hell of a job going in there. And just the style of play that they have, I think the quarterbacks played well. They got one there. And they're like anybody else. They've had to go through some injuries and stuff this year. And they're battling through it. And they're still one of the top teams in this league. So they're finding ways to adapt and continue to win. So it'll be a challenge.
Coach Speak?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, it is. I think it is because, I don't think that he's necessarily wrong, but at the same time, it was more so, it's almost a patting them on the back as well for saying we like the same players, which means, you know, if they're good, we're good too. But also, you know, you're not going to say anything that's going to put them down. So I think at a certain point, you're just going to fluff them up. But I think it was obviously complimentary and there was some good stuff in there. But at the same time, I just felt like it was more coach speaky.
I thought I'm glad you caught the part where it's like, yeah, there are a lot of all their young players are players that we like too. Like,
yeah.
A little bit of, hey, look at us. We're really good
we're
at
good
evaluating
too, bro.
Talent.
We're good too.
Yeah, there was a little bit of self-gratification to that one. I thought that was funny. Now, I don't disagree with what he said, though. Like, the Texans do have good young players. Stroud, now Anderson's not playing. You know, Nico's a really good young player. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, he didn't get into any specifics, so I could see, like, the coach speaky side of it. My favorite part was the we really like their young players too. We would have drafted them had they been there. Here's Bobby Slowick on how they have to be better in protection. How much of this is Coach Big?
Yeah, we just got to be better, really, at every level. You know, up front, it's technique, some fundamental stuff, some just execution of what we're doing, but it goes beyond just up front. You know, it's really every position in the pass game right now. We didn't play good on Thursday. And, you know, that's what we're talking about right now. We're fired up for the challenge this week, and we're ready to go full speed ahead in the regular season and address the things that have come up.
All right, Coach Speak there.
I mean, I think that's the word salad way of saying we know we've got to be better across the board. You know, we know that the first finger pointed is at the offensive line, but we know that, you know, our receivers trying to fill in for Diggs being out and Nico being out have to be better. We know that, you know, the tight ends have to be better. As much as I'd like to say we know that he's pointing the finger at Mixon, he's the one guy you probably don't need to point the finger at because he's been awesome. But overall, I think it's just a long-winded way of saying we just know we need to be better across the board.
Exactly. That's what I heard, too. Like, I don't think it's coach speaky. I think it's just he stated the obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course.
Without singling guys out and doing things coaches never want to do, they just it's basically his way of saying, we already know what you guys are pointing at, and we know we've got to be better.
Here was Slowick addressing the second-half struggles that the offense has had.
I bet you if you look at situational football, it's going to be very much the same. It's going to be in the first half we're good at situational football. In the second half, we're not executing situational football well enough. There's no... You know, people like to think there's some secret sauce between the first half, the second half. There's all these adjustments that happen. Everybody makes adjustments. We've talked about it before. You know, you have subtle things that happen within a game. There's not one thing a defense is doing in the second half that's different than what they do in the first half. We're not doing our job as well, and, you know, and that's been an emphasis for us for 3 weeks, and we got to keep straining on it.
All right, where's this one at? The coach speak.
He's full of it. I mean, this is one where – he's annoyed because he knows that everybody knows what's been going on. And, you know, he's going to say that, and there's a whole lot of BS involved in that because every team makes adjustments, and every team knows that the other team's going to make adjustments. And whether they made adjustments and they didn't work or not, we didn't see that, but what we did see is the numbers don't lie. And when you're not scoring touchdowns and you're not doing things in the second half the way you were capable of doing things in the first half, there's an easy correlation there to say that the adjustments aren't being made.
Yeah, I thought this was some self-preservation, really. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I'm going to start listing off a bunch of reasons that, you know, I can use to defend my second half struggles. Because, like, the whole, this is situational type of stuff. Those situations don't pop up in the first half. Like, he cited that we're not good in red zone. You're not in the red zone in the first half. Like, where is the difference there? So, like, that to me felt more, I'm defending that I've been poor in this area.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, yeah, that there's a little bit of more than a little bit of an annoyance there. But again, we're not dumb enough to think that, you know, you're going to tell us the sky is purple when we know it's blue. I mean, whether you are an analytics person or not, or the numbers don't lie, what we see with the naked eye doesn't lie. They're not doing a whole hell of a lot differently from half to half, and other teams are.
Yeah, that one really kind of annoyed me because it was like, oh, well, I know more than you, and just because I'm minus 40 or whatever it is in the second half, that doesn't mean anything because of situational football. Come on, man. All right, do these takes from national media match what we're seeing from Stroud and the Texans? Here's one from Greg Cosell.
I agree 100%. You know, Stroud's had some tough games this year. Some of it's been on him. Some of it's been on the protection. You could see that he's not as comfortable as he was a year ago. He's starting to rush himself, and he's missing some throws, routine throws, because he's rushing himself. You can see it. You know, as I said, that's not an X and O point, but you can just see it watching the tape that he's just playing a little too fast.
All right.
He's not wrong.
What you see?
Yeah, he's not wrong. I mean, I think that at a certain point, everybody's internal clock is going to speed up a little bit, and things are going to get a little bit out of sorts because of it when you're dealing with what CJ's had to deal with all year. I mean, when you see the numbers and you know the pressures and you know the sacks and you know that on every play he's either running for his life or trying to slide and find a way to find just a little extra time to be able to throw the football, it's going to have a negative connotation on the entire offense and the way he plays the game. I don't think he's wrong.
No, I think he nailed it. Greg Cosell's really good.
I enjoy
Greg Cosell. Here's one more from Chris Sims, that failure Texas quarterback.
Bobby Slowick is not doing enough to help C.J. Stroud right now. C.J. Stroud right now is being misused, and it's a shame. When C.J. Stroud goes 10 for 30, there's an issue. It's the most accurate quarterback in football. I said on Sunday night, this is institutional. This is a problem with their offense overall.
You just saw those last three games for C.J. Stroud. Yeah. Those are basically two of his worst three games. What was working last year?
Yeah.
Is it just that other defenses have figured it out?
I think so. I think there's a little bit of that. Here's my biggest problem. They're not teaching C.J. Stroud anything about pass protection or where he's got to go with the football. That shows up because when they get tricked with certain blitzes, you could tell C.J. Stroud is like, they said they were going to handle all these things. Where's my hot route? I didn't even know who we were supposed to blitz or not. They blitzed five. We had five offensive linemen. I thought we'd be okay. That's kind of what they told me all week in meetings. They're doing a disservice to him. Nobody's really taught him about what's going on here and what happens if that guy doesn't come and this guy doesn't blitz and do all that. He's back there just, wait, hey, anybody open? Oh, wait, I think I'm protected. Let me look around. Anybody open? Yeah, I think life is hard on him right now.
Oh, Chris Sims. the whiny baby second half of that I could have done without. I think the first half is accurate. We've talked about it. The first half of the quote was about the fact that Slowick's doing him a disservice. I think from whether you want to put him in the pistol or not, but moving the pocket, finding ways to get him out of harm's way from the minute he gets the football to buying a little extra time so that he has that extra half second to throw the football. There are ways that I don't think are being used and implemented to give him just that little extra that he needs right now to buy some time and to be able to be more accurate and be more effective.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give any credence to the second half of that as much because I don't think CJ is this. We know he's an X's and O's guy. We know that he's a football junkie. I don't think that he's the kind of guy that's going to sit there and go, why are these guys coming at me that they didn't expect? And why wasn't I prepared for him with his little acting voice? I think that that's a little far-fetched.
Yeah, I'm like 40% of what he said. I don't think that they're misusing him. I just think they're having a very difficult time protecting him. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's misuse. And I do agree with the fact that, you know, to Cosell's point, that he is playing a little bit like one step slower. He's looking down at his protection instead of keeping his eyes downfield. But then, like, teaching him protections and stuff, they're teaching him protection. So yep. Cosell over Sims. Sims, what he said was about 40% accurate. All right, let's get to BZ Money. We're going to hand you out winners. We always hand you out winners. We've been dominating. We were 3-1 last week, up $80. We're up $200 on the year. BZ Money next. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to get to that, you want to hear what I have to say about this because it could help you after you hear that next segment of BZ Money. It's mybookie.ag. Mybookie.ag is the place you need to be if you're looking to put money down on sports. If you know some hot tips, if you know some things, or you feel some things about a certain way, about a certain game or two, the place you put your money down is mybookie.ag because they're always focused on you, the customer, and try to take care of you the best way that they can. They're doing it again right now. If you've never been to mybookie.ag before, never placed any bets, go there right now. When you sign up and you start putting money into an account, make sure you use our promo code BET975. When you use the promo code BET975, you're going to literally cash in immediately because whatever you put in up to $1,000, they're going to put on top of it, and you're going to have double your money in your account right away. So you have more money in your account, more games you can bet on, and more chances you can win. They are going to take care of you also with a loyalty rewards program called MyBookie Plus. When you sign up, they will monitor every time that you place a bet at mybookie.ag. The more you bet, the higher the tiers you go to in the rewards and loyalty program, the better rewards and opportunities you are going to receive. They love you as customers. They are constantly looking to take care of you. The way you cash in on all these things, use our promo code whenever you get the chance. That activates all these bonuses, and it's BET975. Whenever you get the opportunity to use that code, you will find the reason why when you look in your account because they take care of you. You want to sign up friends? Use our code. Cash in. You want to make sure that, you know, you're getting the utmost. The more you bet, the more you make sure that you're registered on mybookie.ag, it's going to get you in the loyalty program to the tiers you want to be at. And when there's no games going on and you want to play some poker or some blackjack or some casino games, they got that too with live dealers standing by whenever you feel like playing casino games. No need to fly to Vegas or drive to Louisiana. Right there at your fingertips on your device. Check them out today because, as I always tell you to do, you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag and use our promo code BET975.
ESPN 97.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gal Media station.